Appreciate very much the invitation to be able to come and to stand before you. Been looking forward to this for some time. My wife and I have actually been visiting the congregation here for probably about 17, 18 years. We were on vacation going from Vernon and spending the week in Fort Worth, and we began worshiping here and visiting here and met Stan and got to know one another a little bit over the internet, and then more so as time went on. And we had Stan for a gospel meeting where I preached in Vernon and where I preached in Abilene. And some who know Stan in Brownwood are still wanting to have him for a meeting in Brownwood sometime. So hopefully we can swing that as well. Appreciate everyone's presence. Know we have visitors and appreciate your coming our way, and it's good to visit with you. Tomorrow morning, announcement for all, including or especially young people, we're having a class in the auditorium. I understand that everyone will be brought in here. We're going to be talking about dinosaurs in the Bible. I don't know anybody who does not like dinosaurs, myself included. And we're going to be talking about dinosaurs in light of the Bible, since that's one of the first places that humanists try to get a hold of our children, is in the area of dinosaurs. And we're going to talk about how that fits into the overall theme of the Scripture. And so be here in the morning during the Bible class hour for that. We'll talk a little bit more tomorrow morning, and we have more time than we will this evening as far as the work in Brownwood and so on. So please be back tomorrow. I know our visitors might be able to, but these will be available, as Stan has said, in various ways. Open your Bibles, please, to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Most of you are aware or have heard some way, maybe read articles or whatever, that my wife and I both came out of the institutional background in 1986. And when I say institutional, I don't mean the far out extreme degree of liberalism, but those that some of us have jokingly referred to as the conciberals. That is, the more conservative end of the institutional spectrum. I suppose around here, some like Brown Trail might fit in that category, and what others there may be, I'm not sure, at least in this community. But these will be the ones that do believe that you have to establish Bible authority. In fact, the first time I ever heard that you need to look for command, inference, or example was in churches of that persuasion. Their disagreement was not on how to establish authority, but on how to properly apply that authority. That is, they believed they had authority for the church support of human institutions such as children's homes and the sponsoring church. But their arguments for establishing authority were not consistent throughout. That is, they would decry that the missionary society was liberal, that instrumental music was liberal because you did not have a command, inference, or example for those things, but they were willing to practice and overlook those matters when it came to benevolent assistance to non-saints or the church support of certain human institutions, because they didn't believe in supporting all of them, but some of them. And when you would ask for authority in those matters, some of them would try to give authority. Others would say, well, it's just an expedient, without trying to determine what is it an expedient to expedite. That is, when there is an expedient, it expedites doing of something that is scriptural to do. And the more my wife and I began digging into those matters, the less the consistency of it seemed to be. We began calling around different teachers that we had respected, having graduated from some of the schools, and couldn't really receive a proper answer until finally we realized there just was no answer outside of having to leave those things that we had come to believe as being true. Now, the lesson tonight is not going to be, as the denominations say, a personal testimony. That is, I'm not going to be talking about what all we did and why we did. Instead, I want to focus in on one argument that helped us and made it clear to us and develop our lesson from that one argument. This isn't meant to discuss even every issue or every aspect of institutionalism. We'd have to devote the entire gospel meeting to it in order to do that. But we're wanting to talk about one particular aspect of institutionalism, and that's to be found in 1 Timothy chapter 5. Because after all was said and done, it was this passage that really made sense to us. Even though we had read the passage, as probably you have many times before, it had not impacted us until we finally thought about how to apply to this issue. And math students, you know what I'm talking about. You can have a teacher tell you a math formula and go over it with you, and you still don't grasp it. And then all of a sudden, one day, your mind is ready to receive it, and it clicks in. And then you go, why couldn't I see that before? And that's the way it was when it came to 1 Timothy chapter 5 also. So I'd like for us to examine it a few minutes, then we'll make some applications of 1 Timothy chapter 5. In 1 Timothy 5, Paul talks about, to the younger preacher Timothy, different age brackets and categories that he's going to be working with in local congregations. Those who are older men, those who are older women, those who are younger women, and preachers, elders, members will find themselves with a wide variety of ages. And some of those need to be handled in different ways. That doesn't mean we ever overlook sin, but it does mean the way we approach, the way we deal with people should and can be different at different times. But as Paul continues this, he begins talking about a certain category of the aged women, in which, when we get down to 1 Timothy chapter 5, starting in verse 8, you read about the importance of providing benevolently for those within your family, to the degree that the apostle would say in verse 8, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Why? Well, because even unbelievers might work and provide for their families. And so if a Christian doesn't, then you're no better off and actually worse than an unbeliever. But he says in verse 9, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man. This widow that is talked about here is going to be described as the widow indeed in verse 5. Or the New King James says, she who is really a widow and left alone. She has no family that will provide for her. Her family is the people of God. And unless one is over 60 years of age, the apostle says, do not enroll them into the number. That doesn't mean that she and other Christians may not be occasionally assisted if everything else is proper, if there's a true benevolent case. That doesn't mean they cannot be aided periodically, but taking into the number implies an ongoing degree of support. That here's a widow that maybe her groceries and her light bill and her house note comes to $1,000 a month, and she has no way of providing for those things. The congregation, if everything else is legitimate need in her case, the congregation might enroll her into that number, that is to provide for her regularly on a monthly basis, that particular amount as is needed. But he says, do not do that for anyone who is under 60 years of age. And there's other requirements and stipulations too. Not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. But refuse younger widows. For when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation, because it cast off their first faith. The apostle continues, though, in the verse 16, with this admonition. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them. And do not let the church be burdened that it may relieve those who are really widows. When we were institutional, the argument was made that anything the individual can do, the church can do, because the church is made up of individuals. Now, on the surface, that sounds pretty good, especially if you're a 18-year-old student sitting in Freed Hardeman College and you're trying to justify what you have always seen practiced among those churches. That type of seeming logic sounds pretty good. But careful study of Scripture shows it doesn't bear out. That argument was first known to be made by Roy Deaver in the middle 1950s, as the institutional question arose, and he perfected a little bit. He said anything the individual Christian can do peculiarly as a Christian, the church collectively may also do. And he responded in that way because people began to respond back, well, I kissed my wife this morning. Does that mean the church kissed my wife? My wife is a Christian and she had babies. Does that mean the church had babies? And of course, the answer to that is no. So he perfected a little more and said, no, anything the individual Christian does peculiarly as a Christian. Well, once again, the Christian is seen to be different from the collective body by looking at just a few passages, such as Matthew chapter 18. In Matthew 18. In Matthew 18, that has sometimes been referred to as the scoundrel's refuge, because here you're not talking about a false teaching or someone who was publicly sinned, but here's a private matter between two Christians in a private way in which to take care of these matters. And Jesus talks about how you deal with this matter, and he says it's in this way, verse 15. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, here's two Christians. Tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear you, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. Now you have four Christians involved. You have two to three witnesses plus the brother who's done the offending, the sinning. You have four Christians. Now, by the standard that's used of saying that anything the individual can do, the church collective can do, you've already got the church involved here. However, Jesus says in verse 17, if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But Paul, Jesus, I thought you just said, though, that the church is involved here because you've got all these individual Christians. No, they're still individual Christians. They are not the collective body of the church. The church is certainly made up of individuals, just as the Lion Club is made up of individuals, but an individual is not the Lion's Club. A chain is made up of individual links, but a link is not the chain. A navy is made of individual boats, but an individual boat is not the navy. Nor is it the case that the collective body is simply an individual saint. It's made up of individual saints. So when we come to 1 Timothy chapter 5, to render it any other way would have this as being nonsense when the apostle says, if a believing man or woman has widows, believing man or woman, Christians, has widows, let them relieve them and do not let the church be burdened. But Paul, I thought you just said individual saints are do this. Aren't the saints the church? He says, no, they're not. Because the individual Christian is to do this rather than the collective body of the church. So that, he says, the church may not be burdened. The apostle says it's possible to burden a church. That is to lump upon the church some things that are not the responsibility of the church to do is to actually burden the church. Here are some of the many things that people are lumping on to the church as activities of the church. Some of these, many of these, would be fine in and of themselves. That is, many of these, it would be perfectly legitimate for individual Christians, any number, to get together and establish hospitals, daycare centers, otherwise legitimate recreation, ball teams. I'm a club manager for the 4-H Club in Brownwood, Texas. These things are perfectly legitimate in and of themselves. And yet, when one goes to Abilene, Texas, and you go to the Highland, quotation mark, Church of Christ, in front of their building is a house that has been donated that says Highland Church of Christ Boy Scout Hut. And when you drive around to the back of the building, you would see the Highland Church of Christ Boys and Girls Club. Imposing those upon a work of the church. Now, friends, think about it. If we purposely wanted to violate this passage, what would we do? In other words, if we purposely wanted to violate thou shalt not divorce, or thou shalt not commit adultery, or thou shalt not steal, what would we do to violate those things? Well, we'd divorce for any reason, we would commit adultery, and we would steal. But since the apostle says, do not let the church be burdened, what more would we do, or for that matter, what more could we do than what some are doing and proclaiming as being works of churches of Christ? Some of these things would certainly not be legitimate, whether it was individuals or a collective body, a sponsoring church, women leaders in the congregations, and so on. And this is an old cartoon that was used in bulletins many years ago in the early 1960s as these things were really raging within congregations. So chances are you have seen this cartoon other times before. But when you look in this passage, and we could find other examples of these things elsewhere in Scripture, but just looking in 1 Timothy chapter 5, we could think of the fact that the church is at work under her elders without burdening the church, because this is the work of the church. That the church's work is evangelism, edification, and benevolence. That is to preach, to teach, and relieve the needy. And yet there's no other institution that's been authorized to accomplish these things. Paul, in writing to the brethren at Philippi, in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 1, Paul addresses the church at Philippi, he says, consisting of elders, deacons, and saints. And that's it. There's no other machinery. There's no headquarters. There's no outside body, no sponsoring church. Paul writes to the church at Philippi as if it were the only congregation that existed in the world. And yet they were able to do, regardless of size, what they could do. No matter how large we are, we can preach the gospel. We can teach the members and we can relieve the needy. Can we do as much as a congregation of 500? No, we can't do as much in 500 as you could with 5,000. But a congregation of 2, can they still teach? They might not be able to teach as much as a congregation of 3, but they can still fulfill all of these commands regardless of the size. With the case of preaching, we find an example of that, and I don't think anyone would disagree, no matter how liberal, it's the work of the church to preach. Matthew 28, 18 through 20, Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. We're in agreement with that. But who was given that work? Well, once again, the church, Philippians chapter 1 and verse 1. No missionary society was authorized to do those things for the local church. When it comes to teaching, Paul would use the example in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 through 16, of a human body growing up to maturity. Because as we teach and individuals learn, we're growing up into a body. Not necessarily growing up in number, but we are all growing up spiritually. And hopefully in growing up spiritually, we can grow numerically as well. But we're growing up, he says, into a mature man. The local church is empowered with that. And we can do whatever's necessary in order to teach, be it by land to train teachers, to make personal visits, have Bible classes, Bible class material. But there's no separate Bible college that's authorized in order to do that work of edification on our behalf. And so it is also with benevolence. And we're going to see in a few moments, there are multiple examples of benevolence from local churches in the pages of the New Testament. Each time it was a local church giving benevolence to its local members. But never was there an example of a separate benevolent organization that was established to do that work of the church. But now when you think about the different societies and organizations that have been created, you have the Herald of Truth that does the work of the preaching for the local church. You would have Bible colleges, whether it be Harding or whether it's Freed Hardeman or Abilene Christian University and so on, seeking to do that work of the church of edification, or whether it's relieving the needy, such as the Church of Christ Relief Society out of Nashville, Tennessee. And that only leaves the local church to become the fundraiser for these human institutions. What's left for the local church to do? When you have taken away from the local church the things that are scriptural, automatically what's left for the church to do is something unscriptural. And let's think about that statement. If you take away from the local church what is scriptural to do and give that to human institutions, and that means the only thing left for the local church to do are that which is unscriptural. And that's why we see these problems and issues going on within these congregations that would wear the name of Christ. You wouldn't have thought a number of years ago that we would have to establish that there really is such thing as a collective body of the church. But the issue of the old pendulum swing, how the pendulum seldom stays in the middle, it goes from one extreme to the other. Well, because there were those people who said everything is the work of the church, you had the pendulum swing to the other end of the house church movement or the Charles Holt movement, who said, oh no, everything is individual. There is no collective body. Christians are the church wherever you are. You're the church at your house. I'm the church at my house. But we've got examples, and passages are on the board. We're not going to take time to read all those. The church is spoken of as choosing servants. It has messengers. It pays wages. The local church relieves and enrolls. Discipline, sends out preachers, is reported to, has worship, and has a treasury. These are things a collective body does, but not individuals would do. But Paul still said, let not the church be charged. There is a work of the local church, to be sure, but let her not be charged. When you look in 1 Timothy 5, there are some things that are listed here that the individual can do, but the church cannot do. And by the same token, in this same chapter, there are some things listed that the church can do, but the individual cannot. For example, the individual can show piety at home. Paul said to learn to show piety at home to one's parents. To repay one's parents. How would the church collectively do that? To marry and to bear children. I'd like to see the church do that. But it couldn't, could it? That's individual. To guide the house, relieve one's widows, drink no longer water only, but a little wine for thy stomach's sake, Paul tells Timothy. Are those spoken of as a collective body or as individuals? On the other hand, there are some things spoken of that the church can do, but the individual cannot do. For example, take into the number. Here was the taking in of this widow into a collective body and assisting her on a regular basis. That the church, the individual cannot refuse younger widows. It's our responsibility. The individual is charged with caring for certain individuals. The church can do these things, but the individual cannot. What is the work of the church? Well, let's think about what it's not the work of the church. It's not the work of the church to care for all the needy. And where we're going with this is still under this major heading of let not the church be charged. That is, if we purposely want to violate this passage, what would we do? Well, I would say then that it's the work of the church to care for all the needy if I wanted to violate that passage. If I wanted to burden the church, I'd say, well, you know, it's the work of the church to care for all the needy in the world. And someone comes along and says, you're anti. You're against helping people. What's the big grocery store chain around here? Is it Kroger, H-E-B, Kroger? Imagine you go to Kroger and you walk in and a friendly salesperson comes along and says, can I help you find something? Is there something you can't find? Say, I am looking for a 2011 Ford Mustang. Well, sir, this is a grocery store. Well, I understand that, and I'm wanting a Ford Mustang. Make it red, please. Well, sir, you need to go to a car lot. This is a grocery store. Oh, you're against cars. I am going to label this store as an anti-car store. Well, no, sir, we're not against cars. It's just that's not the work of a grocery store. When it comes to local churches, when we begin to express we're not opposed to aiding people, but it's not the work of the church to do that, then people say, oh, you're anti-helping people. No, we're not at all. It's not that work. I jokingly said to someone the other day, I ought to sue then the Muscular Dystrophy Association because they take my money, but they don't give it to me. Well, you don't have muscular dystrophy. Right, it should matter. I had the flu a few weeks ago. They should have aided me with that. But it's not the work of the muscular. Right. See. We usually think it's good to specialize. You have an illness, you go to a doctor that specializes in that illness. When it comes to the local church, the church specializes also. Except in today's society, when we're said the church is to be all things for all people and is to meet every need that you have. And there are churches that have Starbucks within them. There are churches that have pizza shops within them. And of course, for many, many years, they had the daycare centers and the schools, and now they have the gymnasiums and aerobics rooms and whole Olympic-sized swimming pools. And pretty well, you name it, there are churches that will have those things within it. But again, if I wanted to say that something was a work of the church, what more could I do in order to violate this passage of Paul stating that you're not to burden the church than to heap some of these things upon the church? It's not the work of the church to care for all of the needy. Even though the extreme institutions, and I mean those who would line up with ACU, in our area we say that ACU stands for either Antichrist University or Almost Christian University. ACU has long been endorsing the new hermeneutics and as far as establishing Bible authority, which is really a hermeneutic of no hermeneutics, a direct operation and a miraculous operation of the Holy Spirit, including modern day healing and speaking in tongues, female leadership within churches of Christ, and all of these in a group that would claim to be associated with churches of Christ. Now, for as liberal as they are, they do not take church support. They would if they could, but it's against their original charge to take church-related funds. Now, they do have ways of getting around that, which they do, but as far as into the conference school, they do not take church support of that. But except for those churches that would line up behind ACU, most mainstream to, we've already used the term, considerable churches of Christ, would still say that it's wrong to use instrumental music in worship. ACU simply says, well, it's our tradition to sing a cappella. But they will not say that it's simple to violate that. When you ask those in mainstream churches of Christ, why do you sing and sing only? You can pick up tracts by such ones of times past as Stafford North and others that had very good tracts. You wouldn't hesitate putting a track rack here, unless maybe the name recognition, that would teach the truth as far as why we would sing unaccompanied by mechanical instruments. And the reason being is that in the pages of the New Testament, every example that we have simply says sing. Matthew 26 and verse 30, Jesus and the disciples went out to the Mount of Olives and sang a hymn. Same with Mark 14 and verse 26. In Acts 16, 25, Paul and Silas in prison sing. Romans 15 and verse 9, sing. Excuse me. 1 Corinthians 14, 15. What shall we say then? I will sing with the Spirit. I will sing with the understanding. Ephesians 5, 19, singing, make a melody in your heart. Same with Colossians 3, 16. Hebrews 2, 12, sing. James 5, 13, sing. And they can see it with this. Now they see it. And in order for there to be any variation from this, we would even have to show that these passages do allow instrumental music. That in some way we're misunderstanding these passages, that in some way they do allow for instrumental music. Or we'd have to show another passage that would allow for instrumental music that we haven't given. Or third, admit that it's done without authority. Now they see it when it comes to that issue. But the exact argument is made when it comes to the issue of it's not the work of the church to care for all of the needy. Because we have this same number of passages when it comes to church benevolence in the New Testament. Acts 2:44, the benevolence was for all that believed. Acts 4:32, them that believed. Acts 6:1, the disciples, widows. Acts 11:27, the brethren. Romans 15:25, the saints. 1 Corinthians 16:1, the saints. 2 Corinthians 8:4, the saints. 2 Corinthians 9:1, the saints. And 1 Timothy 5:16, the widow indeed a saint. See, now they don't. And in order for there to be a variation, though, from this, for the benevolence to be able to go to the non-Christian, we'd either have to show these passages do allow for general benevolence, or that another passage allows for general benevolence, or to admit that it's without authority. Back in 1986, Jack Holt, the younger, Big Daddy Jack, was in a debate with Mac Deaver. Now, we've already mentioned Roy Deaver, his dad. Roy Deaver is the one that in 1950 said, anything you do peculiarly as a Christian, the church collectively can also do. Well, his son, Mac Deaver, was in a debate at Shenandoah Lectureships in Austin, Texas in 1986, or San Antonio in 1986. And Jack Holt made a correct argument. He said, brother, if 1 Timothy 5 tells us we cannot even care for every member of the local church, by what authority are you saying that we can provide for every widow out in the world? Mac Deaver's response was easy. The widow indeed was not a Christian. Imagine that grasping of straws in order to argue that. When you look at her qualifications in 1 Timothy 5, does it specify a Christian? No. But number one, Paul is giving Timothy a list of different categories and brackets within local churches. But then secondly, he says, she has been reported of every good work. Wash the saints' feet. And yet she herself wasn't a saint, but she washed the saints' feet. The implication here is she is a Christian. But that shows what kind of mental gymnastics one is willing to go through in order to try to establish their particular pet doctrine or their pet view that they're wanting to try to teach. Now, it's not the work of the church to care for all of the needy. The different children's homes are all 501c3 nonprofit status, and as a result, you can write to or call any of the children's homes and you can ask them for a copy of their budgets. And you begin breaking down that budget on a per child ratio. Now, I have in my office an original copy of an old Gospel Advocate magazine from about 1955, where Brother B.C. Goodpasture, then editor, said, how can so little do so much? At that time, he said, these children and these homes can be taken care of for $5 a month. One child can be taken care of for $5 a month because they had farms. They had oil wells. They had other industry that was already bringing in revenue. And said, for $5 a month, Church of Sinian can take care of one child. No matter how times have changed. On one of the homes, and this was the Bowles home spent $10,484 per child for child care. That wasn't the end of it. That was just for child care. $5,948 per child just for plant operations. $6,543 per child for administration and general funds. Stan, that means it took $23,000 a year to care for one child. Can you care for one child in your home for $23,000? Let's see. I have 10 children. Can y'all increase your support? Tell me this is not a money-making operation. I was explaining to some at supper this afternoon, and that's just one of the homes. All the homes are in that same category. I had called years ago the Bowles home or the Potter home in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and asked to speak to somebody about the possibility of adopting a child. Their response was, sir, this is a children's home. I said, well, I understand that, and I'd like one, please. And they said, well, we need to let you talk to somebody else. Fine. The director of the Potter home came on the phone, and she said, I understand you're interested in possibly adopting a child. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, sir, we can't do that. I said, and why not? She said, sir, if we let everybody adopt a child who wants to adopt a child, we'd have to shut our doors. Like that's a bad thing. Every organization, no matter what the purpose begins with, ends up with a purpose of self-perpetuity. And that does not matter if it is the Bowles home, Potter's home, Unwed Mother's home, Guardian Truth Foundation. You end up with an effort to maintain and to keep that institution, that society. Suffer perpetuity. It's not the work of the church to care for every individual need. Now, should I be doing that? Well, of course. Somebody comes along, though, and says, but the fact is, everybody won't. Should I care for the needy? Should you care for the needy? Well, of course. Somebody says, but they won't. Well, shame on them. But if they won't, that doesn't mean it's now the work of the church to take that on for them. I doubt, if I were to ask this question, if I would have a show of hands answering in the positive. But if I ask the question, does anybody really believe that justice is carried out in a decent, orderly fashion with guilty criminals 100% of the time? I'm sure most of us would go, no. Here is somebody that is guilty. Maybe he's even pled guilty. And this has happened before. Here is a person who is a murderer that pled guilty, and because of some subtlety, he ended up being released. Maybe he wasn't properly read his Miranda rights, or said he didn't understand them, or whatever the case was. Here is somebody that was known to be guilty. And so the state was unable or failed to do what the state should have been doing. Now, remember, God did not just create one institution. God created the home, civil government, then the church. So if we're saying that because the home isn't always doing what it should, that the church can therefore do it, let's try that with civil government and see if that works. Let's go down to Huntsville when somebody, and of course I speak as a fool, let's go down to Huntsville when somebody is released on some technicality. Pull up at the main gate as they're coming out and saying, hey, big boy, come on, let's go for a ride. And we come up here now to the West Side congregation. We go back in a classroom and we've got a chair set up that's got some electric wires running to the wall. And we duct tape them in and we got the clapper hooked to it and we clap on. We don't recognize that that would be improper. That you couldn't do that. Not scripturally, not legally. But if we're saying that you can do that, if the home doesn't do its job, the church can. Well, why not if the civil government doesn't do its job, the church can? If it works for the one, it ought to work for the other, but we know it doesn't. Why? Because we know civil government will come along and deal with it. But because God does not come down and purposely, personally rather, knock us in the head, then we feel like, well, it must be okay. It's not the work of the church to care for all of the needy. Next, it's not the work of the church to promote secular education. Secular education is good, or at least can be good. We have children in college. We have children trying to get in college. And I'm sure that those of you who have an education and are trying to pursue a higher education are glad that you did. You may be writing some checks each month for a long, long time to pay it off, but you're still glad that you had that opportunity. But it's not the work of the church to promote that secular education. And the funny thing is that brethren in years gone by who preached against the church building, maintaining, or supporting education are now deemed as heroes of the faith by the mainstream institutional churches. Such people as even Guy N. Woods in 1939 at the Abilene then Christian College lectures. And notice his use of the term institutionalism way back in 39. The ship of Zion has floundered more than once on the sandbar of institutionalism. The tendency to organize is characteristic of the age. This writer has ever been unable to appreciate the logic of those who affect to see grave danger in the missionary society but scruple not to form organizations for the purpose of caring for orphans and teaching young men to be gospel preachers. Of course, it's right for the church to care for the fathers and widows in their afflictions, but this work should be done through and by the church, which has elders of the oversight. Also, George W. DeHoff, in 1951, said, what is God's institution to educate and train men in the gospel? The answer is the local congregation. What is God's institution for doing charity and relief work? Answer, the local congregation. What is the sole and only organization God has said anything about using to preach the gospel? Answer, the local congregation. F.B. Shrigley, gospel advocate in 1931. The New Testament churches were independent of one another and from all other congregations. They were not bound together by any organization under the control of an eldership of any church. Neither were they banded together under one board created by any state or national law. There was no discussion among them about how to build and control institutions such as orphanage homes of the aged, hospitals of the sick. There is no more authority from the New Testament or control of such things than there is control of a farm or a health resort. Sometime after the apostles died, men became dissatisfied with this simple organization, which eventually led to the Roman Catholic hierarchy. The Catholic Church undertook to organize in a way to control schools, hospitals. Now we have brethren who should know better trying to find authority for their own operating of such things under the overworked rule of expediency. Brethren have a right to own and operate newspapers, schools, homes for the aged, farms. They not only have the right to teach the Bible in and through anything they have the right to own, but it's their duty to do so. But this is all far from saying they have the right to build anything in the way of religious institution not authorized by the New Testament. If owned and operated at all, it should be owned and operated by individual Christians, not by churches. When churches leave their one task of preaching the gospel and saving souls to build other institutions, they are likely to get into controversy over how to own and operate such institutions as they may build. And certainly those things have been proven to be true. Brother Barrett, who founded Abilene Christian College, we've already said that to this day they do not take church funds because of his objection. In 1930, Brother Barrett at an ACC lecture said, Christians, any number, may scripturally engage in any worthy work, such as running colleges, papers, and orphanages. Other Christians may be properly called upon to assist them in every way, but no local church should be called upon as such to contribute a thing to such enterprises would be out of harmony with the will of the living God. And yet these men today are heralded as great champions of the faith. When you would go to Freed Hardeman College, their restoration library is the B.C. Goodpasture Library. Or you go to the Barrett Dining Hall. Or you could go to any number of buildings on some of these, quote, Church of Christ college campuses that would bear their names. When they spoke it, they were heralded as champions of faith. When you and I say the exact same things, you and I are referred to as Pharisees, mossbacks, antis, and the list goes on and on. It's not the work of the church to promote secular education. It's not the work of the church to provide recreation. It's not the work of the church to provide recreation. When we lived in Abilene, every year when ACU would start back, we would always have the new students who would begin visiting churches around town. And since we were just a couple miles from campus, we'd have a lot to come over. And they were always looking for a church to land for the period of time that they were going to ACU. And usually when they would walk in their shorts and flip-flops and a can of Coke in their hand into the auditorium, and they would look around and say, where's your fellowship hall? Don't y'all have a volleyball court here? Do y'all have a basketball team? And it wouldn't be unusual for them to either walk out before services or at least never show up again. The issue and the question was, were we going to provide recreation for them? Now, I talked about those who are heralded as champions of the faith and how that if the same things were said today, then it would be seen as being a terrible thing. But here once again is Brother B.C. Goodpasture in 1948. Now, remember, this is only 1948. It sounds like a long time ago. But when you're looking at the 2,000-year spectrum of Christianity, it's not that long ago. In 1948, Brother Goodpasture wrote in the Gospel Advocate magazine. Now imagine if you have looked at Gospel Advocate, it's seeing something like this in it today. Would they even publish it? Brother Goodpasture said, for the church to turn aside from its divine work to furnish amusement and recreation is to pervert its mission. It is to degrade its mission. Amusement and recreation should stem from the home rather than the church. The church, like Nehemiah, has a great work to do, and it should not come down to the plains of Ono to amuse and entertain. As the church turns its attention to amusement and recreation, it will be shorn of its power, as Samson was when his hair was cut. Only when the church becomes worldly, as it pillows its head on the lap of Delilah, will it want to turn from its wonted course to relatively unimportant matters. Imagine Paul selecting and training a group of brethren to compete in the Isthmian Games. But of his work at Corinth, he said, "For I have determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified." 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 2. Do we really think Jesus died to establish the Church of Christ softball team? Did Jesus leave heaven and come to earth to establish a Church of Christ bowling league? Did He come to earth so that His kingdom could be eat, meat, and drink? It's not the work of the church to provide recreation. When we look in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 1 Corinthians 11, Paul deals with an issue in the church of Corinth in which the Lord's Supper had been perverted into a common meal. From looking in the first chapter, there was divisions in the church. So one group was meeting this corner, one in another corner, and they were eating among themselves. And this was becoming an ordinary meal. And what did Paul tell them to do about it? To wait till after the Lord's Supper? To wait till after the closing prayer? What did he say to them about eating in this manner? In verse 22, "What, do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say in this? Shall I praise you in this? I do not praise you. Do you not have homes in which to eat and drink?" Now somebody comes along and says, but preacher, don't you know that the church of Corinth most likely met in a house? Probably. As did the majority of New Testament congregations. When he says, "Do you not have homes in which to eat and drink?" is he talking about the physical structure of a house? No. The apostle is saying whose work it is to provide. Whose work is it to provide for this recreation? If we have common meals, and that's enjoyable and pleasant, and we'll probably have that at some point in this week, whose work is that to provide for it? He says, "Do you not have homes to which to eat and drink?" The work of the home rather than the work of the church. Somebody else comes along and says, "But preacher, I got you there because," and this has been used many times, "because Paul not only said, 'Do you not have homes in which to eat,' but he says, 'and drink.'" See, we got a glass of water right up here inside the church building. There's a water fountain out there. And you know what? Kids use that water fountain for entertainment. Don't they? They go out there and play with that. And we say we don't believe the church providing entertainment. But you know what? What's the difference? Here's the difference. The first time Jerry gets up here and he says, "We're thankful for all our visitors and we want you to fellowship with us around the water fountain after services," then we might consider taking that out too. One is a necessity. One fulfills a physical need. And for that matter, it's even the law as far as building codes and requirements. So when Paul says, "Do you not have homes to which to eat and drink?" Is the drink in there? Surely. Ray Hawk, mainstream to middle of the road to liberal preacher in Jackson, Tennessee, with whom I've had some written debates and discussions. His argument is, well, if you can have a bathroom in which to get rid of what you ate and drank in a church building, then you can eat and drink in a church building. Once again, it has a smattering of logic to it until you really begin dissecting that. "Do you not have homes to which to eat and drink?" He's saying whose responsibility. He's not talking about the structure. Not talking about a four wall here. He's talking about whose responsibility. It's the responsibility of the home. We agree all work and no play makes Johnny a dull boy. There's never been a question of that. The question is whose work and responsibility. And yet, you would have such as this, the Bering Drive, Church of Christ, and this goes all the way back to 1978. So you can only imagine what goes on today. This is the Bering Drive, Church of Christ, in 1978 in Houston, Texas, which Ed Fudge rotated as one of the elders. And here is from their bulletin of Youth Alive in July, and some of the things that were available was a live television coverage of the world's largest hot dog. Come and take a bite of a record of the 300-foot world's largest hot dog. Or white water raft trip, $45. Or Day at the Movies being shown at the building for $1. And Chris Christian in concert for $1. And all this at the church building or being used as church funds and structure in order to facilitate these things. Now what's somewhat amusing is that when the 300-foot world's largest hot dog advertisement came out, the more conservative institutionals attacked that one. They attacked that one and said, that's liberal. I don't know of any mainstream Church of Christ, no matter how conservative on some things they may be, that do not have an occasional meal in their building. Now, they may have the sisters to make it and bring it to the building rather than being catered, but they will have their potlucks at the building. Don't they occasionally have a 6-inch hot dog at the building? Foot-long coney? Will they please tell me at exactly what foot level a hot dog becomes liberal? It wasn't liberal when they saw it smaller. When it was a regular size hot dog in the fellowship hall, see, the mainstream institutions were fine with that. But suddenly when it became 300 foot, they said, that's liberal. Now they see it, now they don't. Here's the family flyer for the Madison Church of Christ. Now, I realize you can't read this. I have it up here just to show I'm not just making this up. And you're welcome to read it afterwards if you'd like to. These are 5 pages of what you would have gotten if a few years ago you had joined the Madison Church of Christ in Greater Nashville, Tennessee. The second page is was a letter that was welcoming you from Buck Dozier, who was their family life minister at the time. And on the third page was a list of when their family life center was open and when the track was open and their physical fitness program on page 4 and their different activities that there would be on Mondays on page 5 and the ladies' gymnastics program on page 6. Basketball program on page 6. Arts and Crafts League on page 10. Golden Ages on page 11. CPR class, page... There's nothing wrong with any of these matters except imposing it as a work of the church. And again, the apostle says, let the home do these, lest the church be burdened. Antioch Church of Christ beats the Methodists. Well, if you can't beat the Methodists with doctrine, I guess you can beat them in ball. Once again, did Jesus die so that the Antioch Church of Christ could win the league crown? It's not the work of the church to promote secular education. Well, it's not the work of the church to even deal in otherwise legitimate business. A number of years ago, 2 professors at ACU, Burkeen and Faulkner, came out with a series of videos that were actually quite good. I don't know about showing necessarily in a auditorium setting. Had to be some judgment used in that for discretion, but some legitimate films that could be shown through couples and counseling them perhaps as elders and working with families. And that was shown across the country. I know my wife and I attended those when we were still institutional. And they've been shown across the country. And now many, if not most, of the Churches of Christ that I've seen showing those are charging admission in order to see these. Some churches are selling Mother's Day mugs, Mother's Day stationery. Others, such as the Harpeth Hills Church of Christ in Brentwood, Tennessee, raising money for its youth hobby shop by, as this letter says, beautiful clothes by Fletcher's of 2922 West End Avenue will be modeled by ladies from local congregations. This is famous label clothing at discounted prices, latest styles, casual and dressy, and appealing to ladies of all ages will be viewed. Browse before the show while you have coffee, then shop and buy afterwards. Rooms will be they don't tell you it's Bible classrooms, you're going to be trying these on in. Rooms will be provided for trying on and buying of clothes. Modeling is a work of the church in order to raise funds for the work of the local church. Stan needs a raise. Have the ladies to model clothing. And I know we're getting chuckles, and our intent isn't to be funny this evening, but it's sadly humorous, isn't it, some of these things that are occurring. Or you could be like the Madison Church of Christ, 1991. See live Noah's Ark. Have live animals. In which they actually had lions and tigers brought into the church building in cages and a table set up, and you paid to have this catered meal on a table sitting with these animals around you. That might be fun at the zoo. Could be legitimate there. Work of the church. This one I stuck in under this category of it's not the work of the church to do legitimate business. And I'd have question as to whether or not this would be legitimate business, even if it were the individual. But I simply wanted you to see this one. This was the Lee's Summit, Missouri, Raytown Church of Christ, Greater Kansas City. And when I preached there, we in that vicinity, not at this church, but we had received their bulletin, which announced the following. Walking with God, an 8-hour course in Christian meditation with Gary Blake and Myra Ferris, class leader. Sounds like a woman's name. Registration is $9, includes snacks, materials, cassette tape. Now, I realize that's a small amount, $9. But friends, if it's the work of the church, by what authority are they charging for it? If it's not the work of the church, by what authority are they doing it? And here's what you'll learn there. You will learn how to relax. How to take walks with the Lord in your mind. How to deepen your prayer life. How to let God speak to you. Poor apostles, they didn't have this course. But they didn't know the answer to these things. And the advantages, benefits that it says you could have is deeper, longer sleep. I don't know about here, but at Brownwood, our brethren have no problem with that. But this is spoken of again as a work of the church. Reduced levels of tension and stress. I'd be very stressed to be in a church that did this. Insights in life's daily problems and how to solve them. A closer, deeper, more meaningful walk with the Lord. And again, this being presented by a group that at least purports itself to be Churches of Christ. It's not the work of the church to provide for recreation. Now, once again, somebody says, but preacher, I agree, individuals should be doing it. I have a brother-in-law who preaches for mainstream Church of Christ. In fact, he used to preach in DeSoto, Texas. He's now in Georgia. And as we discussed these things, he said, well, I agree, it should be the home doing it. But he said, Wayne, usually though the home isn't going to do it. So somebody's got to do it. So if my wife neglects me and doesn't feed me supper one night, it's the work of the church should provide it for me? Think of how preposterous if we were to apply that type of logic, quote unquote, all the way out. Since there have been all these things established to do the work of the church through, since there has become the missionary societies through which to preach, there has become the evangelistic societies through which to evangelize, there has become the edification societies through which to edify, there has become the benevolent societies with which to aid the needy. then what's left for the church to do? Well, as we said at the beginning, what's left for the church to do is to be a fundraiser for organizations. In which case, you have the tail wagging the dog. You have it backwards. Now realize that as you begin talking about some of these things to our brethren in mainstream churches, many of them will tell you, but we don't believe in all those things. We don't support all those things. Usually when I have used the term institutionalism of late, and I'm not sure who in what lecture they started saying, use this argument. But evidently somebody did because they all have started using it. Some will say, well, I don't know what you mean about institutional because I don't believe in supporting all the institutions. I may believe in supporting this institution, but I don't believe in supporting that institution. But the fact of the matter is they all stand or fall together. If you can support one of them, why can't you support all of them? Think about this fact. They will tell you that if there is a Catholic family down the road who is in need, while the church here can aid the Catholic family because they're family in need. And they will tell you that it's right to support a children's home, quote, orphan home, because that's just a home that needs benevolent need. But will they support a Catholic children's home? Well, why not? You said you can support a Catholic home. You said the orphan home is a home. So why can't you support a Catholic children's home? That ought to work. But they said, no, we won't do that. But they stand or fall together. The same reason logic that allows for one would allow for the other. Now, you'll see a hospital up here. And you may be thinking to yourself, well, I never heard of a, quote, Church of Christ hospital. But don't you know that anything that is separated by a body of water becomes scriptural? That is, they would say it's unscriptural to have a hospital in the United States operated by Church of Christ. But you can go to Haiti and India and many countries in Africa, and there you can have, quote, Christian hospitals. But wouldn't do it in the United States. And there's nothing new about that, really. Brother Marshall Keeble, the famous evangelist of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, worked among black brethren in churches of Christ. He made the argument way back in the 1950s and said that he longed for the day that there would be Church of Christ hospitals. And this is what he said. He said, because I'd rather be poked by a Christian than a non-Christian. Well, if I had my druthers and everything else were equal, yeah, I would be too. But I just want a good doctor. If he's a Christian, then so much more the better. But what does that have to do with being a work of the church? Brother Floyd Decker left the Christian church in the 30s. And at the old Victory Boulevard church in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, there was a lectureship in 1944 called Why I Left. And that book is still around. You had people like Grover Stevens on Why I Left the Baptist Church in it. And you had Brother Hayhurst on Why I Left the Non-Bible Class Church of Christ. And one of those was this Brother Floyd Decker, who preached a sermon during that lectureship on why I left the Christian church. Now keep in mind, this was 1944, and here's what he says that the Christian church is doing that churches of Christ in 1944 were not doing. And of those, he said, the Christian church has missionary, benevolent, and educational organizations to execute the work of the church. Church of Christ does not. Well, they didn't in 1944. He then said the Christian church emphasizes society and the physical man by appealing to the carnal nature with church carnivals, bands, plays, choruses, dramatics, church kitchens, church camps, and elaborate fellowship halls. The churches of Christ do not. They didn't then. The Christian church is educational directors, associate ministers, and youth directors. The Church of Christ has elders, deacons, evangelists, and teachers. Well, when I was a student at Freed-Hardeman College, Bible students, those who are wanting to, quote, be preachers, were required to take a class on how to be an educational director. I had been an associate minister and applied as a youth director. Churches of Christ, certainly those that are of any size among the mainstream groups, would have all of those today. See, the Churches of Christ didn't have those things in 1944, but what about today? Now, at one time, until just a couple of years ago, I would end the lesson at that point with a question of saying, what would Brother Decker do today if he were around today and saw what was going on in the name of Churches of Christ? Failing to realize that Brother Decker did live to see some of the earliest aspects of institutionalism coming on the scene. In 1948, Brother Decker wrote an article called 18 Years Ago, because it was 18 years at that point when he had left the Christian church. And in part, here's what Brother Decker said. A little more than 18 years ago, I gave up what is known as the Christian church. The principles I gave up then, I have never seen a reason to re-embrace. I have never regretted one moment of service that I have rendered in the church of the Lord. Today I see no reason to go back to the Christian church and see no reason to accept the principles advocated some by now, which would lead me back to the practices that I practiced in the Christian church. Do we need some other organization within or without the church to assist us in our educational, benevolent, and missionary societies? If we think so, let us say so. Let us take a stand out in the open and be just as what we are. Preach and declare publicly what you are advocating privately. Because some then were beginning to advocate privately that they could begin supporting and establishing these matters. The question comes down, somebody says, well, that is sad. To think that there are groups that call themselves Churches of Christ that are engaged in these matters. But what does that have to do with the West Side Church of Christ? Well, for one, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. Secondly, we travel and lets us know that there are differences, that not every group that purports to be of Christ is of Christ. Also lets us know that there are going to be members that are coming in and out as they travel and visit, and we need to address these matters and concerns with them. But it also lets us know where we can head if not careful. Without proper leadership, without demanding proper preaching and teaching from the pulpit and in classes, this is what can happen. Many of these were churches that at one time stood strong and sound. Even the now infamously liberal Highland Church of Christ in Abilene was at one time conservative. And today you would probably feel more at home visiting a congregation of the Southern Baptists than to walk into the building at the Highland Church of Christ. But also, here's the import for you and I. In Hosea chapter 4, there was an issue with Israel. The northern kingdom of Israel had already gone off into idolatry. They had had the truth of God, like the Lord's church today. But God declared they played the harlot. They went after the world. They wanted to be like the world and do the things of the world. And the northern kingdom went off into the things of the world. But as Hosea preaches concerning the southern kingdom who was maintaining the truth, and we might compare that to ourselves, that the other groups were like the northern kingdom of Israel, one time had the truth, but now they've gone astray, and we would be more like Judah, the king to the south who was maintaining the truth. And here's what Hosea said, that message of warning about the northern kingdom had to do with the southern kingdom. In Hosea 4:15, Jehovah said, though thou Israel play the harlot, let not Judah offend. Somebody says, well, what can we do? We can't turn those groups around. Yeah, chances are not. Some individuals, but probably not congregation-wide. So what can we do? Just this, be faithful. As an individual, be faithful. As a congregation, be faithful. But thou, Judah, though Israel play the harlot, let not Judah offend. God bless this congregation and the leadership and the elders and the preachers that stand in the pulpit here. Continue to be firm, to be strong, and let not Judah offend. Can we help you this evening in responding to the invitation? We've been speaking this evening about things of great concern among churches of Christ. I visited a congregation meeting once, and I had one family that said, well, we have a non-Christian, though, who's going to be attending that night, and if you preach on those things, we don't want to air our dirty laundry in public. Well, friends, the dirty laundry's already out there. They drive by. They see those things on the billboards. And upon looking at those, you think they don't look at that and see that here are groups that think they are of Christ that are having trunk or treat and a chili cook-off and a pumpkin patch? Or Santa in the audience? And when they ask the question, well, what will they think? And I said, depends how honest they are. Hopefully they would look at a group like this and a lesson like this and say, you know, here's a group that is really concerned about being right. Here's a group that's really interested in doing biblical things and biblical ways and calling Bible things by Bible names like all churches of Christ claim that they want to do. But here's one that really does it. So instead of being embarrassed or ashamed when we have visitors, let's be very happy to tell them the difference and why we're not like ones down the road. Let not Judah offend. If we can help you this evening in responding to the invitation, realize this is a group that's concerned about the truth and they're concerned about your soul. As a visitor myself, I don't know who's here that might not be a Christian. But if you're not a Christian, we want to encourage you to obey the gospel tonight. Jesus said in John 8, verse 24, except you believe that I am He, you'll die in your sins. In Luke 13:3, except you repent, you will all likewise perish. In Mark 16:16, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. If we can aid you this evening, responding to the gospel of all, give us that privilege. If you'll come at this time as we stand together as we sing.